This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a closer look at stories from our radio newsrooms across the nation. Today, we're putting on our hazmat suits and diving into the politicization of America's health. That's as President Donald Trump and his administration work to, quote, make America healthy again, while critics say what they're actually doing is selling out to fringe elements and even quacks. We learned many things during the COVID-19 pandemic, including the fact that vaccines can be politicized. Sure, polio and measles vaccines have saved countless lives and preserved healthy lives for millions. But who did you vote for? With that in mind, know that Trump's health secretary, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., announced this week that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention will no longer advise that healthy children receive routine COVID shots. Now, that's a significant departure from the CDC's previous approach of suggesting annual shots for everyone age 6 months and older. Kennedy has cited a lack of data to support shots for healthy children, which echoes his long-standing skepticism about the need to vaccinate children against the virus. Kennedy has repeatedly said that children are at low risk for COVID. But low risk, it doesn't mean no risk. So Dr. Michael Osterholm joined Odyssey in Minneapolis to discuss what he calls the, quote, wholesale destruction of public health in the United States.
Remember, first of all, let's start out with the historic perspective in which Mr. Kennedy said during his hearings for approval as Secretary of Health and Human Services that he would not take vaccines away from anyone. Well, he's just done that now with both COVID vaccines for individuals who have high-risk scenarios, i.e. pregnant women, and for children. And you can say, well, why children? It turns out that COVID still raises a major public health challenge with children. In this past year, even though we had a very bad flu year, the number of hospitalizations and serious illnesses for kids with COVID was just as high as it was for influenza. Now, we routinely recommend influenza all the time as a vaccine to help prevent that kind of serious illness, hospitalizations, and even deaths. So there's no logic as to why you wouldn't allow people to have it. And that gets us to the next step, is the fact that what happens here is by doing this, you basically take these vaccines out of the pay system, meaning that insurance companies and others will not now have to pay for these vaccines because they're not recommended, which means then for a family who has several children that want to get vaccinated, they want them to be vaccinated, may cost them hundreds and hundreds of dollars to be vaccinated, which then in a sense makes it impossible for them to get the vaccine. We have ample data showing the increased risk of COVID among pregnant women. If there was ever a group that needs to be vaccinated, it's them. And what was really amazing to me about this was just a week ago when two individuals from FDA published an op-ed piece, not a scientific-based piece, an op-ed piece in the New England Journal of Medicine, in which they basically called out the need to limit the number of people who got COVID vaccines with no scientific data, not any kind of a process to get expert input. But they did say, however, we will make sure that people at special risk or high risk will still have access to the vaccine, which is pregnant women. And if you looked as of this morning, pregnant women were still listed on the CDC website as, in fact, being at increased risk. So what you saw happen here, Chad, was an arbitrary decision made by a couple of people who did not have the expertise to do it. They circumvented what has long been a really well-established safety and effectiveness oversight with FDA over determining which vaccines can be used from a effectiveness safety standpoint, and CDC's advisory immunization practices making the recommendations on who should get it. So at this point, this model really serves to suggest at any vaccine that Mr. Kennedy wanted to take off the market right now, he could. If you want to take measles vaccine off, it's very possible he could. This is a scary, scary proposition.
I think it was so important, that answer, because that was going to be my next question, the power of recommend. Because if I recommend something to you, a movie, a restaurant, so okay, I'll take that under advisement. But you're pointing out in this answer the power of his agency within our government, within the wording and what it means for a recommendation, the extraordinary cost this now puts on individuals, and many of them who are in a difficult financial position now and without insurance, they just can't afford this.
Absolutely. The cost is important, but again, we still should come back to that fundamental point of, are these vaccines effective and are they safe? And they circumvented that entire process here. And they basically made it seem as if somehow the data do not exist to address these issues, but they do. And so I think that what we have is really this concept of a gold standard of science they keep promoting. And it's the most anti-gold standard of science that I could imagine. And so, you know, this is not a partisan statement on my part. You noted when I got on the call here today, you know, I've served a role in every presidential administration dating back to Ronald Reagan. And Trump won, I was a science envoy for the State Department. You know, I've worked for 3 Republican governors, 2 Democratic governors, and as I affectionately say, 1 independent wrestler. And, you know, I was close to every one of them because it was always nonpartisan. It was just, what are the facts? What are the data? And so if someone hearing me today saying somehow that, oh, I must be, you know, this political camp or not, no, I'm here to protect public health and to promote public health. And that's all is happening today with these statements.
Well, that's the default so often. If anybody now, let alone someone with your credentials, if they want to differ and they provide evidence, you could have a spirited dialogue with them, okay? And if that's a fellow doctor, fellow scientist. But now, anytime anyone criticizes any part of the Trump administration, in this case, with decades of experience and data, the default is, oh, you must hate Trump. Well, there's plenty of people who don't like him, but it's not about hate. It's citing information. Let's just cite a little more information. RFK Jr. once called the COVID vaccine the deadliest vaccine ever made. And when he's been asked questions lately, by accredited journalists about the measles vaccine and would he recommend it? Okay, again, the power of recommend. You know what he said, Mike, repeatedly? I'm not a doctor. I'm not a doctor. Don't take my advice. But in this case, he's not going through the normal process. He's not citing scientific data. He's not working with the CDC. He's offering this recommendations as someone who has been a vaccine skeptic on key aspects of vaccine, not all vaccines. That's his comeback. Oh, I'm not against all vaccines, but you've spoken out powerfully about key ones with decades of proven effectiveness. And he says, I'm not a doctor. Guess what? He's still not a doctor, but he did make this recommendation today.
Well, and on top of that, he also has made numerous statements that are contradictory, but more importantly, they influence what people hear and think about vaccines for their kids. For example, when he attended the funeral of one of the young girls that died of measles in the Texas outbreak, the father specifically asked him in front of others what he thought of the measles vaccine. And he said, well, you know, it's one you can use to address the epidemic. But, you know, we don't really know what's in those vaccines. And I'm being quoted here. You don't really know what's in those vaccines. Now, if I'm an average citizen, I hear that, I'm going to say, this guy's looking out for me. I won't get that vaccine. And that's the kind of thing he does all the time, where he is so, I might say, almost slippery on the issues that mean, how can an individual interpret what this benefit is or isn't for me. And let me just be really clear to this audience. None of us are talking about mandating these vaccines. That's not the issue that we've heard so often. We're talking about just availability. We're talking about the fact that half the kids that died from COVID in this country last year were actually had no underlying health condition, meaning that you could have flagged them ahead of time and said they should get vaccines. So if I'm a parent, a responsible parent, I make my kids wear their safe seat belts in the car. I also want to have them protected against the serious outcome with COVID. Why not let them? You know, you're not saying they have to, just let them. He's taking that away from people right now. And that goes to the fundamental point he made in his hearing where he said, I will never take vaccines away from anyone. That is just simply not truthful right now.
How do we compare, Mike, with COVID vaccine recommendations to other comparable Western nations? You know, England, France, all of the EU, Australia, New Zealand, other countries that in some ways we view as peers and as a democracy and medicine and science. In this area, how do we compare?
Well, you know, the one we look at most closely is Canada. And we virtually are lockstep with Canada, okay? They permit individuals who are kids or pregnant women to get vaccines. And remember, a week and a half ago, we as a country also permitted pregnant women to get these vaccines and have them covered because they announced a week ago that when they were going to limit vaccines, they would still make them available for people at increased risk for serious illness, hospitalizations, or death, i.e. getting COVID during pregnancy. Today, without any new data, without any kind of review process put into place. And remember, we're not asking our government officials to review this. These committees that are brought together are among the best scientists in the world in these areas, okay? And so they're the ones that are reviewing the data, making the recommendations, and the FDA and the CDC can act on that. Now we've taken all that away. The experts are no longer involved. The key people within the organizations of FDA and CDC are not involved. It's left to a couple of individuals who have come in this administration with no previous experience in this area whatsoever, and they're just making pronouncements that, frankly, have no basis in science. That's, to me, scary in of itself. Forget the vaccine itself of the issue around COVID. For any vaccine, that is scary to me.
Mike, excellent information, an incredibly important topic. I appreciate the availability. Enjoy the day, and you know we'll reach out soon.
Thank you, Chad. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Mike Osterholm talking about this decision and recommended in this case isn't like a typical recommendation. The access and availability is important, and I get it. Most of us right now, Dave, when's the last time you thought about COVID? It's been a long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Most of us aren't in that mix. But if you want to be and you're in this category and a guy who's been a vaccine skeptic, decade after decade, a guy who lies frequently when quality interviewers, he'll say something, say, no, let me go back and show you what you've said before. And he starts rambling and babbling. This is the guy who should be making this decision. Really? And by the way, if they had someone who was a doctor, who was a scientist, I may not agree with all decisions. I would understand the background a little bit more than this guy who was put in this position for one reason. Trump convinced him to get out of the race to help him win the election, which he did decisively.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
And then he rewarded him for the votes. Not his qualifications, but rewarded him for his votes.
Americans, it's good for us to remember that no matter where someone falls on the political spectrum, there are fundamentals that we can agree on. Things like kids should be safe in school, senior citizens should be able to eat after they can no longer work, and everyone should be as healthy as possible. A new report by Health Secretary Kennedy highlights the various environmental, dietary, and lifestyle factors contributing to chronic health issues in 40% of American children. This recently released Make America Healthy Again report reveals that ultra-processed food and environmental toxins were at the top of Kennedy's list of problems that need to be urgently addressed to curb increases of chronic diseases during childhood. The report also cited sedentary, technology-driven lifestyles, and the overprescribing of medications. Here's Marty Griffin at Odyssey in Pittsburgh with more on RFK Jr. and the report.
The environment, poor diet, chronic stress, over-medicalization. I couldn't argue with a lot of that stuff.
We're reducing the dietary guidelines from a 453-page document that we inherited from the Biden administration. That was driven by the same industry impulses that put Fruit Loops at the top of the food pyramid. We're going to deliver instead a 4 or 5-page document that tells people how to give healthy food to their children. Those dietary guidelines will then drive changes in the school lunch programs all over this country. We are writing SNAP waivers every day to the states that are applying for them so that sodas and candies are no longer available using food stamps. Taxpayers should not be paying for food-like substances that are chemically based that are poisoning our population.
I don't have a problem with that. But the report, poor diet, ultra-processed foods are the likely cause of a lot of chronic diseases. The commission writes that 70% of the diets of American children are made up of high-caloric, low-nutrition foods, of ingredients not naturally found in kitchens, dyes, flavoring, non-sugar sweeteners. I believe it. Additives, including Red 20. I believe it. Chemicals in the environment, unnatural substances in the air, land and sea. I believe it. Dangerous chemicals present in items including heavy metals, pesticides, microplastics, cleaning products, cosmetics. I believe it. Nonstick cookware. I believe it. Including water and fluoride. It also warned of electromagnetic radiation from technology, phones and laptops. Decline in exercise. Massive problem. Massive problem. Sedentary kids. 60% of 12 to 15-year-olds don't have healthy cardiovascular fitness. Right on. And over-medicalization. I get it. Tim Murphy. Dr. Tim Murphy, good morning. Good afternoon, Doc. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Marty?
Fundamental facts that our kids are not healthy. Yes, sir?
Absolutely. And we've gotten used to and it's become more so of having our kids live a lifestyle that's extremely unhealthy. Sure. You mentioned them. It's the massive amount of processed foods, high sugar soft drinks, poor exercise, poor sleep, sedentary lifestyle of focusing on social media. Those are all major factors. And here's what we know. When kids exercise, and it's been declining over the last few decades, when kids exercise part of their day, they actually do better in school. Sure. Their intelligence quotient, their IQ goes up. Their grades go up. They're much more effective in studying. We want kids to sit more, or we give them even more computer time as their way of learning, less interaction between them. By the way, with social media, we have found over time, social is actually a misnomer because kids are actually less social when they're spending all their time on these phones. The next thing with regard to the processed foods and the sugars, it causes an inflammation in the brain and in the system. So that's where you see this inflammation that takes place in cells and chemicals called inflammatory cytokines and cortisol. These are already increased. They're already increased when people are under stress. And you make that even worse by the foods that we ingest and the sugars. So what does that do? It increases our risk for acute illness. It increases our risk for chronic illness. The number of kids with chronic illness and obesity is, well, not no pun intended, but it's huge.
It is.
And those also have an effect upon kids' social interaction. So all these things combined together, he's spot on with saying, we've got to change this. You know, it's interesting. I hear from people, gee, when I was younger, I ate things like meatloaf and macaroni and cheese and spaghetti, and it wasn't that much of a problem. Yes, but those are different foods then as they are now, and a lot less exercise. Kids are not spending that valuable time with exercising. And so what do? They're not paying attention in school, so let's refer them for some medication, call them attention disorder. The number of kids now with attention disorder is a massive amount. I believe that RFK referred to is almost 25%.
Yes.
The number of adults who are claiming they have attention disorder is huge, too. Why is it? In part, we're multitasking. We're not focusing.
True.
And two, it's real easy to get those drugs. Some adults can even go online, fill out an online questionnaire with some doctor somewhere else and say, I've got these symptoms.
So
easy
true.
Enough to say, I'm distractible, I can't focus attention, I have a hard time producing. Someone will write you a prescription, and then you go and get a stimulant medication. And by the way, Marty, if anybody takes a stimulant medication, you'll probably do better, including a cup of coffee. So what happens is people say, well, because I'm better, I must have that diagnosis. No, it doesn't work that way. You should be doing other things. So we have all these kids going on with this diagnosis and medication, and adults too, instead of adapting the lifestyle to be better and more healthy. So he's spot on. He's missing some major things, but he's spot on with these things.
Hey Doc, you wrote this really cool book that actually kind of said the things that he's trying to say now, The Christ Cure. But you have these six things that I find amazing, the fastest way to health. You want to run through this because I think it's so relevant in your book, The Christ Cure.
The word is faster. It's fitness, attitude, sleep, training, eating, relaxation. Real quick. Fitness. We need to spend time every day and discipline ourselves with some cardio and strength training. Every age has this. You'll live longer. You'll have less illness, less depression, less anxiety. Attitude. We need to have mental attitudes focused on positivity, mental flourishing. We can do more. And when you spend time looking at negative social media, negative news all the time, negative TV shows, you just get down. We have to instead adjust our attitudes towards optimism and faith and a more positive outlook on life. Sleep is important. You need 7 to 9 hours of sleep. I don't care what people say. I can go by a 4 or 5. Yeah, maybe now and then, but it takes a toll on the system. You need that kind of time at night for the brain to clean itself out. It's like the night cleaning crew comes in at night. There's a lot to this, but that's where you flush out the bad proteins and things from the brain. Fitness, attitude, sleep, training, mental training. You got to keep your mind sharp. So for some elderly retired folks, if you sit around not doing anything, your mind's going to deteriorate.
Sure.
You got to get involved in things that are going to challenge your mind to think. So Marty, I'll give you some credit. When you challenge people to think about things and not just react, you're actually helping them with this mental training part. Don't just make a statement, you know, but you challenge people, really think this through, look at all sides. So that's whether you do math or science or music or art, whatever it is, all ages need to do this. Fitness, attitude, sleep, training, eating. You have to have healthy eating with fresh fruits and vegetables and meats and not with the additives and proteins and highly processed foods. If you're just eating soft drinks and potato chips and processed meats, it's not good for you. It takes a toll on the body. And finally, relaxation. That's meditation, mindfulness. It's that calmness we need at episodes throughout the day. It is everything from a quiet walk in the woods or through a park to sitting quietly or sitting in a church or kneeling in a church and praying. All those things are part of this. And these are the elements that are needed for basic, sound mental health. Doesn't take care of mental illness, and that's some of my criticism of the of RFK's report. But it is important for our mental health.
Dr. Tim Murphy, hey, man, personal question. What do you do with your kids and their grandkids? What do you tell them when they're eating crap? What do you tell them or when they try to?
They say, you're not going to get it. We go out to take them out to dinner. It says, I'll name a certain soft drink.
Yeah.
I want root beer. No, you're not having that. You can have water. You can have juice, but you're not having this. You know what? They complain for a second, but
that's it.
Or they want some other junk foods. You know, I find my one grandson, he'll find candy hidden somewhere in the house.
Yep.
And he'll use some language. It's a lot of parents. My mom said I could have this.
Yeah.
No, she didn't. Maybe she said you could have that a year ago, but she didn't say you could have it now. So it's a matter of parents monitoring it. But, you know, just don't buy it. When kids are in a grocery store and they're down the cookie aisle, don't go down the cookie aisle. Don't go do those things and only buy small amounts. You know, like I get it, kids like sweets. We all do.
Yeah, yeah.
But you have to look at the content. And when you look at the ingredients on some of these foods, breakfast cereals, supposed healthy protein bars, massive amounts of sugar, particularly processed sugar, high fructose corn syrup and other things, the best way to do it is eliminate it from the diet. So you can either spend some time in the store shopping healthy foods or spend more time in the doctor's office waiting to see the doctor for your illness.
Friday night's pizza night. Should I blow that off, man? Is that what you're saying, Doc?
Well, this is a great question. Where's the pizza dough come from? There is flour that comes that's from the Italian sources.
Yep.
Look at the ingredients. And if it's some of the buy things from farms and pasta that is not using highly processed wheat flour. So, you know, ask about it. Where do you guys get your pizza dough from? Some of them are really, really good stuff, and some of it's just, you know, that's a highly processed white flour. So I'll try the thin crust, Marty.
Kennedy has been exceptionally busy during his short time in government so far. Because not only did he spearhead the report on health among American children and change the way vaccines are recommended to different cohorts of Americans, he also wants to change the standards by which vaccines are tested. The Trump administration is seeking to impose a new testing requirement for new vaccines. That new process would require all new vaccines to be tested against a placebo before they can be made available. But experts worry that the new rule could require vaccines that are already tested, like those against measles and polio, to be retested, slowing down production and access to them. And these challenges come at a time when the public health system is already strained, making it critical to maintain robust vaccine testing and disease surveillance capabilities to protect public health. Dr. William Shafter at the Vanderbilt University Medical School, an expert in preventative medicine and health policy, as well as public health medicine, joined Odyssey in the Bay Area to discuss.
So when the HHS says these will be used, this testing will be used on new vaccines, what's the concern there?
Here's the concern. We have to get a little nerdy here. First of all, if we introduce a vaccine against a disease for which no vaccine is currently available, then we will do, in a standard way, the placebo-controlled trial. No problem. Here's where the problem comes up. Suppose we develop a new, and we hope better, vaccine against a disease for which we already have a vaccine, whooping cough, for example. We know the whooping cough vaccine is good, but not perfect. Okay, how do we test that? Well, we can't do a placebo-controlled trial. It would be unethical to withhold the whooping cough vaccine from half the population. So going forward, developing improved vaccines for the ones we already use will be very difficult. You can't do that in a placebo-controlled trial.
Is this at all surprising to you from a secretary who says, whose behavior has been that he doesn't trust vaccines all that much?
Well, I don't comment on individuals, but this seems a policy which we'll have to see how exactly it's implemented. Will it be sufficiently flexible so that we can improve our vaccines as well as develop vaccines that are new against diseases against which we don't have already got a vaccine?
I'm going to figure part of this is about safety. What are your thoughts about the safety of new vaccines as they come out?
Yes. So the clinical trials that we've been just discussing assess not only the effectiveness of the vaccine, but they also assess its safety. What sort of side effects does the vaccine have? Now, we can determine that very carefully in these placebo-controlled trials when we have populations studied, and these are large, 12 to 20,000 people. You can imagine how difficult it is and expensive to do these trials. However, some adverse vaccine reactions are very rare. They occur 1 in 100,000 or 1 in 1,000,000. Those can only be detected after we start using the vaccine in millions of people. And we have an ongoing vaccine adverse safety system, surveillance system, that's actually the best in the world.
Do you, how do you think this is going to affect vaccine hesitancy in this country, if at all?
I'm not so sure it will have a direct effect on vaccine hesitancy on the part of individuals, but it may impute some vaccine hesitancy for people who are developing new vaccines when they think a placebo-controlled trial will not be feasible. So they may say in the laboratory, we're not going to try to improve that vaccine because we'll never get it licensed. So they'll study something else. So there may be an inhibitory effect on the development of new and improved vaccines.
Are we talking about the possibility of COVID vaccines being affected this way?
Well, COVID vaccine, like flu vaccine, is kind of special because it has to be updated on an annual basis. And if you did a trial, first of all, I think it would be difficult to do a placebo-controlled trial because, once again, the current COVID vaccine is recommended for everyone. But that issue aside, by the time you finish the trial, the COVID season is over. And so we just have a very practical issue there in trying to determine that. We have other means of determining the effectiveness of vaccines when we can't do a placebo-controlled trial.
I wonder what your thoughts are about the government's ability to monitor disease outbreaks and handle them with the loss of staff people at HHS and other health agencies in the federal government.
Yeah, that's an ongoing concern because with the withholding of funds and the reductions in force, the people who have been fired, that happens at the federal level, but the funding goes down to state and local health departments. So you affect the functioning of those health departments also. And yes, there is a concern out there that's now widespread in the public health community whether we will be able to detect and respond to outbreaks of illness, such as measles, for example, that are occurring in the United States and whether we can do that promptly and effectively going forward.
Yeah, we have been talking so far about things we know about, diseases we've seen before, measles, flu, COVID, things like that. And much to our chagrin, there are always novel things popping up that then you have to react to. What are the dangers involved there?
Well, the dangers there are when the unknown comes to us, you need a trained workforce that is sensitive enough to detect that early, take that information into the laboratory and determine the nature of the new threat, and then to field a team that can limit the extent of the outbreak. All of those components are important. And with the reduction in force, it's clear that our response mechanism will be impeded. It's like cutting the number of fire personnel you have in your fire department. The fire department won't be able to respond as effectively.
Is Vanderbilt, like other universities, feeling the impact of some of these funding cuts?
Oh, there isn't any doubt that every major medical center currently has felt the impact and is making adjustments.
What sort of adjustments are you having to make there?
Well, we're looking at which programs have been diminished or ended. Those faculty are looking for other things to do and ways to support them.
You know, we talk about this in terms of dollars and cents, which is only natural because that's the direct impact here. What about the moral obligation we have to, you take an oath that says you're going to do no harm and you're going to help people. What happens there?
Well, the concern is great because some of the diminution in funding has directly affected how we can help people. In USAID, for example, we had programs that were directly providing drugs and other medical assistance to populations around the world, and that has been curtailed, I mean, just very abruptly. And it's left those people now adrift where they were relying on the resources that we were providing. I think that that's just terribly disturbing.
And of course,
it's not something that we do in the United States.
And of course, the ripple effects would be felt worldwide because we do a lot of R&D and new drugs are produced here. They may be manufactured elsewhere, but they get produced here.
They do. And they have been used not only within our own communities, but as I say, in communities around the world. You know, I've long said that the best kind of diplomacy internationally is white coat diplomacy. If you're out there providing medical assistance, oh, the population will be so very grateful. You're making new friends that way.
Yeah, I feel compelled to ask you on a personal level. You had to go through the whole COVID thing with people distrustful of government, medical advice, et cetera, making your job very difficult. Then once you get through that, you have this sort of era of cutbacks in the funding provided to do the job. How difficult is it to be in your field right now?
Eric, it is difficult. But, you know, public health people are by their nature optimistic. They assume that their work will make the next generation healthier. And so that persistent optimism is something that we're all holding on to. And we recognize that we're together in this, and we shall prevail.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The Make America Healthy Again report is nearly 70 pages long. And as NBC News reported, it was heavy on outlining problems, but light on offering concrete solutions. While this MAHA report was widely anticipated to focus on pesticides, it instead highlights the cumulative load of chemicals in the environment, mentioning pesticides alongside other environmental exposures, like PFAS, microplastics, fluoride, electromagnetic radiation, and more. Kennedy said that the next stage of this process is to come up with policy recommendations for the president. He added that the assessment will inform a follow-up report that will be released in the next 100 days. This show is produced by Christy Strouser and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.